I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the Middle East. What do US Presidents Johnson, Nixon, Clinton, Obama and Biden all have in common? Well, they have blood on their hands, a track record of death and destruction through intervention in countries such as Vietnam, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Argentina, Chile, Palestine, Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, Somalia, Sudan. That's just naming a few. Between them, they're responsible for millions of deaths around the world. And it continues today as incumbent President Joe Biden is scheduled to meet with the Prime Minister of Iraq, a country he's been bombing in the last few weeks alone. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is an official who served in the Obama, Clinton, Nixon, Johnson and Kennedy administrations. He was director of the task force that produced the Pentagon Papers that exposed U.S. intervention in Vietnam. It was the late Dan Ellsberg. You can watch our studio interview with him on Going Underground on Rumble, who famously leaked impending defeat in Vietnam. Dr. Morten Halperin is currently the advisory council chair of advocacy group J Street. Thank you so much, Dr. Halperin, for coming on. You know, it's more than 5 years since British authorities captured Julian Assange. In London, people can see our interviews with him, and one of his greatest supporters was Dan Ellsberg, the late Dan Ellsberg, who I understand was your friend too.
Yes, he was.
You know, before we go to the current state of the world, terrible state of the world, arguably, just remind us of how many, perhaps millions of lives you and Dan, in a way, together saved in the former Indochina.
It's very hard to know how to try to count that. The release of the Pentagon Papers itself did not shorten the war. Almost nobody read them, and the war continued. And in fact, Nixon escalated the war after the release of the Pentagon Papers. What did end up ending the war was Watergate. And Watergate was in part created because of Nixon's dismay and distrust of Dan Ellsberg. He was afraid Ellsberg had papers about his administration and was going to release them and therefore was trying to silence Ellsberg. And that led to the plumbers, to the break-in of Dan's psychiatrist's office, and then to other actions, which eventually led to Watergate and then to Congress cutting off the funding for the Vietnam War. And that saved millions of lives because the war would have gone on, if not for Watergate, until the end of, at least the end of the Nixon administration and probably beyond.
So that was literally a domino effect coming from your assessments through Dan Ellsberg. I mean, do you support, like apparently so-called mainstream media in the United States, although they don't give it that much prominence, the release of Julian Assange? Apparently Biden has been pictured, perhaps not really understanding what the question was from a journalist, that they're considering stopping the persecution of the WikiLeaks publisher.
They ought to stop it. The espionage law, as it is written, should not apply to any actions relating to release of information to the press, either by government officials or certainly by the press itself. The Assange prosecution was the first time in the history of the United States that somebody who is not a government official has been indicted for violating the Espionage Act, for doing things that gave information to the public. And I think the espionage that would be unconstitutional if it covered that. It would be far too broad. And we don't need any statute punishing that. We need more information given to the press, not attempts to stop that.
Clearly, because it's so detrimental to the Biden presidency, why do you think he's doing it? Maybe it's something related to that story you just told me about the Pentagon Papers. Does Biden expect Julian Assange somehow to have secret papers that will impact on November's election? What is the purpose of ruining the United States' reputation internationally for actually not really having a First Amendment worth the paper it's written on?
Well, I think it started with Obama, who is responsible for this whole expansion of the espionage law to cover things related to giving information to the press, and then was continued under Trump. And I think the Biden administration just inherited an ongoing case, and it seemed safe to continue it. I doubt whether they gave it much consideration, but I think they're now concerned much more about attacks on them from the left and issues that excite people on the left not to vote for Biden. And I think they're looking for things to do that can help them with that, you know, with that cohort of voters. And one of the things would be to drop the Assange prosecution.
I'll get on to the so-called left in a moment when we get to Gaza. But what was your opinion then of the Jack Teixeira case? Teixeira leaked Pentagon papers that showed the Biden administration knew Zelensky's so-called counteroffensive would fail, that British soldiers were in Ukraine. Do you agree that Jack Teixeira shouldn't have been prosecuted under the Espionage Act? He got 16 years, as I said.
I think the Espionage Act, as written, is far too vague to cover information leaked to the press. And I'm not sure we should have a statute generally covering that. What Congress has done in certain fields like atomic energy, like the names of covert agents, like communications intelligence, has created separate, narrowly drawn statutes that cover those categories of information and make it a crime to publish that kind of information. And I think that's the way to handle the problem, not with a general espionage statute that covers all information that the government is trying to keep secret.
As things got worse and worse, I mean, we know what Edward Snowden says now about mass surveillance, and I'll get on to your surveillance in a moment. Did you not tell your bosses, Obama and Clinton, about your worries of this widening use of law to prevent the American public from understanding how their government worked?
Well, Clinton didn't do any of it, so we absolve him of that. We can talk about other issues. The Obama administration, I was on the board of something called Millennium Challenge Corporation, so I did not have an opportunity to raise these kinds of issues with president or with anybody in the administration.
Okay, well, if you've absolved Clinton, I'm sure some people will talk about the Yugoslav war in that regard, as regards what happened to information during that war. Let's get on to Kissinger. I should say he threatened me once on the phone. I'm not sure why. Tell me why your boss, Henry Kissinger, the late Henry Kissinger, was bugging your phone. He was your boss.
Well, I was working for him on the National Security Council staff, and the New York Times published a story saying that the United States was secretly bombing Cambodia and providing some of the details about how the bombing was being carried out. And Nixon was furious because he was trying to keep the bombing secret. He thought if it became public, there would be an outcry that he was expanding the war and that he would be forced to stop the bombing. So he talked to Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, and Hoover told him his solution to everything, Hoover's solution to everything, was wiretap. So Hoover told him the way to find out who's leaking is to wiretap. So Nixon told Kissinger to figure out who on his staff might be doing the leaking and give those names to Hoover, who would then wiretap those people. And I think Nixon gave my name, Kissinger gave my name, not because he thought I had leaked the story, but because he thought that Hoover and Nixon thought I had leaked the story, and the way to protect himself was to give my name to the FBI.
What a lovely, lovely man. Of course, Kissinger had big doubts about the Ukraine conflict before he died. You, however, are as hawkish as ever on that. You think that the United States endangers its national security if Zelensky doesn't win the war?
I do. I was in the Clinton administration when we were urging the Ukrainian government to give up its nuclear weapons. You remember when the Soviet Union fell apart, there were nuclear weapons in several of the states of the new independent states, formerly part of the Soviet Union. And one of those was Ukraine, which had a substantial number of nuclear weapons. The Ukrainians were reluctant to give it up. And we got together with the Russians and urged them to give up the nuclear weapons, to turn them back to Russia. And in return, Russia and the United States both promised Ukraine that we would defend them if they were attacked by any state that was a nuclear weapons power. And of course they have been. And we've chosen not to send our own troops, which I understand, but I think we owe them military equipment and support so that they can preserve their independence.
Yeah, but if it's really to do with U.S. security, why over the dead bodies of Ukrainians? And as for that nuclear weapon deal, which happened while you were working there in the Clinton administration, You think Victoria Nuland would have arranged the 2014 coup, as we've heard from that leaked phone call, if Ukraine had nuclear weapons? Russia would have moved much more swiftly, arguably, to protect the people in eastern Ukraine, don't you think?
I'm not sure how you sort all those out. Nuclear weapons are not usable, and no state has ever figured out how to actually use them to advance their policy interests. So I'm not sure it would have made any difference.
Oh, I thought that's why you were mentioning it in that regard. But I think the fundamental question is, and Lloyd Austin was saying at Congress in the past few days, look, this is about helping the industrial base of the United States as much, and that's a quote from him, as it is about Ukraine. Don't you think the rest of the world, which clearly is trading with Russia, most of the world is ignoring these NATO nation sanctions, they think if the United States really seriously thinks what happens in Ukraine is a threat to the American people, the American military should be fighting there rather than making the Ukrainian, a generation of Ukrainians die for this?
Well, I don't think we're making the Ukrainians. I think, as far as I can tell, the war is supported by the vast majority of the Ukrainian people who do not want to be part of Russia and are volunteering and fighting in large numbers. And I think the United States owes them the support for them to fight the war. If they didn't care, if they thought it was just fine to be part of Russia, then I don't. The United States does not have an interest separate from the Ukrainians to keep the Russians out.
I mean, reports suggest that there's a 1 to 10 fatality ratio in this conflict. Desertion rates are rocketing. Every European city is full of Ukrainians of fighting age that have arguably left the country. So you are a firm believer that the $61 billion will make all the difference to the war effort, even though the Lloyd Austin, I think, even said the $61 billion is recycled through arms companies in the United States. So Zelensky won't get any of that money for a few months yet, even if it did pass
Congress.
Who'll get
the weapons? As I understand it, who'll get the weapons? What Austin is saying is we use the money to buy weapons from American weapons manufacturers, but then ship those weapons to Ukraine. So they get the weapons. The money, in effect, stays in the United States. We simply buy the weapons and then ship them to Ukraine.
Dr. Halperin, I'll stop you there. More from the former official in the Obama, Clinton, Nixon, Johnson and JFK administrations after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with former official to the Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Clinton and Obama administrations and current advisory council chair of J Street, Dr. Morton Halperin. Dr. Halperin, you were talking about how important it is to continue the war in Ukraine. Why do you think it is that, we had a Reagan official on the show the other week, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense, telling us, you know, if necessary, the United States would use its nuclear weapons at Ramstein Air Base if it became necessary. So important is Ukraine. Why? I mean, do you believe that Russia is interested in invading Poland or France or Britain? That seems to be the kind of thing Antony Blinken says on a regular basis. If you let him go into Ukraine, he's going to take over Paris by next year.
I worry much more about the Baltic states than I do about France.
But why would he want to take Finland? Seriously. I mean, Russia's the largest country.
Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
And
those states were part of the Soviet Union. They broke away, actually, some of them before the breakup of the Soviet Union. But Putin has shown in Georgia and elsewhere around his borders that he's not satisfied with the borders that were drawn during the breakup of the Soviet Union. And I think he will continue to push until he stopped.
For what purpose?
His purpose is to recreate the Soviet Empire. I think he has said it was a great mistake. The greatest mistake of the century was for the Soviet Union to allow the states to break off and form separate governments, that they're all part of one nation, whatever he calls it, and that he has a sacred obligation to try to restore at least some of that. And I think he will push until he's stopped.
Well, he obviously says that's not the goal, but do you not see that there are echoes of what you're saying there about present-day Russian Federation and what the Nixon administration and the Johnson and Kennedy administration said about how important the war in Vietnam was and the importance, I suppose Nixon might add, of destroying Cambodia. Do you not see any echoes of that?
Sure, there are. And it's always difficult to tell whether a war is one that's just or not, and whether war is one that is in the American interest to fight or not. And that is an issue that has to be faced and resolved in every case. But the fact that one concludes that the Vietnam War was not a just war, was not a war we can win because we were on the wrong side, does not mean that the Ukrainian war is not one that we can win and is not a just war. It may be that it's also an unjust war, but you have to ask it separately about each war. And it's not the case that no wars are worth fighting. And it's not the case that every war is worth fighting. So each one has to be taken on its own merits.
Of course, of course. But then we now have the revelations that the CIA had bases in Ukraine ahead of time. We have the call about Victoria Nuland talking to Jeffrey Piot. What was happening in 2014? If Russia or China started putting their secret intelligence bases on the Mexican border of the United States, would the United States be justified in advancing into Mexico to take them out? I mean, the context is slightly different because, of course, there were Russian speakers being persecuted in eastern Ukraine.
Yeah. I don't think we would have the right to go into Mexico. And I think it was a mistake to expand NATO. I was against NATO expansion and believe it was a mistake, and contrary to the assurances that we had given to Russia about what would happen if they allowed Germany to be unified. And I think we should have made a deal, if we could have, it's not entirely clear whether it was possible, with Russia, that Ukraine would not become part of NATO, that NATO would not station any overt military forces or clandestine intelligence.
But, well, why not now? Why not have peace talks now to end the war? Zelensky has made it illegal to have peace negotiations. There were, of course, ones in Istanbul. Why do you just support more weaponry being poured in rather than peace talks?
I'm always in favor of exploring the possibility of ending a war. And I would certainly be in favor of offering the Russians an agreement that NATO, that Ukraine would not become part of NATO, that NATO would not station forces in Ukraine, and either overt forces or clandestine forces, and that the...
Wait, sorry, Dr. Halpern, this is exactly what the Russians said they wanted, isn't it? I mean, well, you're not, what you're saying
Russia
is...
What they wanted was to end the independence of Ukraine. Their original objective when they started the war was to capture all of Ukraine.
No, where are you getting that from? Because the objective always since the Minsk Accords was for a neutral Ukraine, just as you've outlined there. Now, of course, the Russian Federation says, look, it's too late because clearly these Western powers can't be trusted and they need a buffer zone. But even then, I don't know, maybe they are open. All Putin says is he wants negotiation, and it's now too late to have negotiation, arguably, because previous negotiations have been double-crossed.
Never too late to have negotiations. I think Putin was clear that he wanted to capture all of Ukraine. That's certainly what the Ukrainians expected. And president of Ukraine, you know, was debating whether to leave the country or whether to try to go underground. But whatever that is, we're now where we are. And I think it is time to start trying to end the war. And as I said, I think some concessions, some should be made to Soviet security concerns.
Well, clearly Ukraine are going to get a much worse deal than they could have before, arguably. And as I said, Russia has made it clear it never had any interest in taking Ukraine to start with. So let's go to that other war the Biden administration is involved in weaponizing and pouring billions of dollars, annoying Zelensky as well, because Zelensky is saying the weapons that were headed his way are going to be sent to Netanyahu. Why do you think the Biden administration is continuing to pour weapons into Israel to bomb Gaza when it doesn't help him electorally? It doesn't help him internationally in terms of reputation. It doesn't help the United States' reputation. And apart from, I suppose, some profit-making by weapons companies in the United States that, say, Antony Blinken consulted for and Lloyd Austin worked for, what is the advantage of continuing to send 2,000-pound bombs to Netanyahu while publicly saying, don't use them?
I don't know. I think it's a major mistake to send those weapons. And I think the United States needs to make it clear that it does not support a new invasion in Gaza, that its weapons cannot be used, anything we support cannot be used for that purpose, and that it's time to open up the borders and let in the humanitarian assistance that's urgently needed. And I think Biden is now finally beginning to push in that direction in a serious way. And I think the Israelis will, at least to some extent, comply with that, because they are dependent on American support.
Well, Biden's talking about a pier rather than any great success with the tonnage of food coming in. But you didn't really answer me. Why is he doing this then? What, I mean, you've been in these administrations. What are the conflicting conversations in the Oval Office about such an obvious...
It's just habit. You know, Biden has lived his whole life believing that Israel should be supported, believing that it has a right to exist, which clearly it does, but feeling the political pressure in that direction. I mean, it's always been the case up until now that the pressure on presidents was to support Israel. That is now dramatically and spectacularly changed. And I think Biden is not yet caught up with that. But I think they now understand it and are beginning to move in that direction.
Yeah, but it's too late, isn't it, for the international reputation? These cases will continue legally, obviously. You know, it's he's meeting with the Iraqi Prime Minister al-Sudani whilst he's bombing Iraq in the past few weeks. Obviously, Britain and the United States bombing Yemen for solidarity action for their shipping embargo for Israel-linked goods. Tell me about Madeleine Albright. Why did she appoint you director of policy planning under Clinton? Of course, Albright is famous in this region of West Asia for saying it was a price worth paying when 500,000 maybe children were killed by U.S. sanctions on Iraq.
I'm not familiar with that quote. I don't know why she picked me. I knew her. I've known her for years. And people on her staff, there were some people on her staff who were very close to me and I think urged her to appoint me. But she never exchanged. I got a call out of the blue asking whether I would accept the job of policy planning director if I was offered it. And I said I would.
Because we have that other anniversary, don't we? I mean, what did it feel like when Clinton bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade and ahead of the total breakup of Yugoslavia? You were there.
I was there and in favor of the intervention in Kosovo, but not obviously bombing the Chinese embassy. And we never could get, I never was able to get to the bottom of what that was, whether it was somebody deliberately did it, and if so, for what reason. But I think the intervention to stop what was a genocide against the Kosovo Albanians was justified, and I think...
Well, the policy certainly went ahead, but if you're willing to recognize Kosovo, so then you have no problem with Vladimir Putin recognizing Crimea as part of the Russian Federation.
But there was no... there was no... ongoing effort by the part of the government of Ukraine to massacre and drive out the Russian speakers living in Crimea. I think the right of people to break away from a government is conditioned on there being a massacre underway.
Yeah, but you don't have a problem with referendums. In this case, if, to remind viewers, it was NATO bombing and then unilaterally against the international community and against any UN resolution recognizing Kosovo as some kind of separate country and then imposing a referendum where indeed they voted the way the Washington liked. Isn't there, are there any similarities between what that is and what the Russian Federation
is? Do you think it was a mistake to recognize the independence of Kosovo? The agreement was that Kosovo would come under the UN Security Council's supervision, and the future of Kosovo would be determined by negotiations among the interested parties, including the Serbs and the Kosovo Albanians, and subject to approval by the Security Council. And I think the decision to declare Kosovo independent and to recognize that independence was a mistake and a violation of the Security Council resolution, which led to the Security Council supervising Kosovo. And I regret very much that that was done.
Yeah, well, most countries, I don't think, really recognize it today, except Western European ones. But then, do you think, and clearly you've voiced concerns about Donald Trump's election, what's your view about his political persecution, as he says it, leading opposition leader in the polls, and on the cusp of jail all the time, every other week, from partisan political authorities allied to the Biden Justice Department, as far as you hear from the Trump campaign. What do you think that looks like to the rest of the world? Of course, it's Trump who's being done for under the Espionage Act we spoke of earlier.
Yeah, well, the UC Espionage Act against him is different because it's for the mishandling of classified information, not giving it to the press, but simply storing it where it shouldn't be stored and refusing to return it when you're asked to return it. But it's a separate crime, and it's one that doesn't give rise to First Amendment issues the way the Assange case does. But I think there are genuine issues, and I think the dislike of Trump and the fear of his election blinds people to the fact that one needs to be very careful about going down the path of starting to indict former presidents. I think that's very dangerous, but I'm much more comfortable with the January 6th indictment than I am with the others.
Dr. Morten Halperin, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to the survivors of US, UK, EU nation armed killing in Palestine, Syria, Yemen, Lebanon, Iran and Iraq. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.